Okay, we're joined by Professor Rod Davis from the Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. Welcome to the Jodcast, Rod.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you.
And you've got a really exciting story about science happening, science in action, and a discovery that's been made in data and still people are looking at. Would you like to start off by explaining what's been found?
Yes, what we have found in radio astronomy in the last years is built on an understanding that was quite well established, we thought, of what the origin of radio waves was. There are normally thought to be two different components of the radio emission, one of which was what we call free emission, which comes from hot ionized gas, and the other was synchrotron emission, which comes from high energy, relativistic energy, electrons spiraling in magnetic fields. And we thought this whole subject of the origin was done and dusted, but new things began to appear on the horizon in the 1990s, the early 1990s, some 15 years ago now it is. Something strange happened in the cosmic microwave background experiments when we were looking for the early signs of structure appearing in the universe. We found that there were components there that were, in fact, unexplained by the normal free or the synchrotron processes. And this was work that was done at Tenerife in collaboration with our Spanish colleagues, because our Jodrell Bank work on the cosmic microwave background in Tenerife really got the Spanish involved in the CMB work, as well as providing a marvelous collaboration on an extremely good site on the ridge on the top of the Tenerife Island.
So that's on the top of Mount Tidy?
This was actually on Izania. Okay. Which is not quite the top, you're quite right. That's another mile above us. And we don't go up there because out of it there's rather sulfurous fumes which corrode everything that happens.
So why do you go up to that height rather than do it in a field in Cheshire?
Yes. Well, we tried doing it in the field in Cheshire and it worked for one winter only. And the reason is that we have a little too much atmosphere or water vapour in the atmosphere in Manchester, and that water vapor in the atmosphere is irregular. You know, it forms clouds, but substructures on all scales, and that gets awfully confused with the microwave background because that happens on many scales. So we need to get above the atmosphere, and it turns out that the Tenerife site is up at 8,500 feet above sea level, and you're above the inversion layer in the atmosphere, which means that you're above the cloud tops. And it's marvelous up there. And in an afternoon, you can look down and see that the people down on the beach must be under the cloud, but we're above it up there. And that makes very good observing. And it's one of the best sites in the world for observing the cosmic microwave background. Anyway, this clue that came in the early 1990s was that this extra emission that we were getting, the extra radio waves that we were getting, were in fact correlated with the dust emission in the galaxy. So somehow or another, it was the dust that seemed to be responsible.
So they seem to be at the same parts of the
same
sky.
Same parts of the sky and structures that we know and love, regions like the Duck in the around the North Celestial Pole. There's a region there that looks like the children's duck in a bath. And that thing has got exactly the same shape in our radio, this new type of emission, as it is in the dust, which you see in the far infrared.
Right.
So that was one of the points that sort of helped tie in the relationship with the dust. And the other important thing was a paper that was published by Drain and Lazarian, and that predicted an emission from dust, but not ordinary dust in the interstellar medium, the medium between the stars, but very small grains. And if they're small enough, they will spin on their own axes, and there's a little bit of sort of offset charge, so that they're effectively spinning charges in space, and that it's ideal for generating radio waves. That's how we generate radio waves and radio transmitters and so on. But these are irregular. And
so how small is a small grain?
That these grains are in mass a few tens of hydrogen masses or a few carbons. So they are...
They're very, very small.
They are extremely small. And some of the structures may even be large molecules, large, partly irregular molecules. Some of them are called polyaromatic hydrocarbons. And these are sort of great chains and structures with carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen in them. And they add up to something like 30 or 50 carbon atoms, for example, within them. And these will spin at frequencies of tens of gigahertz. In other words, these dust grains are going around at about 10 billion times a second. Now, we don't sit there and count them. If we put our radio telescope in front, we actually find that the spectrum that we get is peaked in the range of a few tens of gigahertz, we call them, tens of billions of cycles per second is the radio emission. And this was the prediction of Drane and Lazarian. This was a peak spectrum, which was quite different in nature from the spectrum of the free-free or the synchrotron that we'd normally been accustomed to in radio astronomy.
Maybe you should explain exactly what a peak spectrum means.
Yes, this is important, that when you plot the strength of the signals that you get from the spinning dust as a function of frequency, you'll find there's a peak at a certain frequency in the spectrum. It rises from around about 10 gigahertz, which is a wavelength of 3 centimeters, through and peaks at about 30 gigahertz, a wavelength of 1 centimeter, and drops again once you get to, say, 100 gigahertz, and it's more or less undetected there.
And is that just because they're more likely to rotate at a particular frequency?
They are. The whole physics of the emission sort of gives you a peak, and it's maybe a little complex to go into it here, but at the high frequency end, the photons, the energy of the radio is high, and it radiates at a price. It slows down. It has to get its energy from somewhere. So the higher frequencies are weaker because the spinning particles don't last long there, whereas they keep going more. And the low frequency end, it is just the spectrum of an oscillating object falls at the low frequency. So we've got a low frequency cutoff and a high frequency cutoff.
And so you get more
the peak seems to be around about in this range. So they're actually, it's a most interesting but quite simple concept in a way, that a particle will spin under the influence of radiation hitting it, so that it will spin, and we say that its energy is the moment of inertia times the spin frequency squared. And if you make this moment of inertia small enough, the size small enough, it spins faster. Purely and simply the dancer bringing in the arms, as it were, and spinning faster when they make themselves thinner than the pirouette technique. So it's the same sort of thing happening out there with these small dust grains. And so that prediction is really, in some sense, common sense, and you wonder why it hasn't been predicted before. And it had. Bill Erickson, one of our pioneer radio astronomers out in Texas, who built himself a 200 megahertz array way back 40 years ago, was actually looking for this at a much lower frequency. His sums didn't enable him to come up with the right answers. But the idea was, it's a 40-year-old idea, but we've been able to prove now that it works and that the sort of dust particles are out there. You can actually get these, well, the PAHs, the polyaromatic hydrocarbons. Now you can see their spectra in the near-infrared. The new Spitzer spacecraft has been measuring these over the last 4 or 5 years, And so you can see that the PAHs are there as one possibility, but there are other types of small grain that could also do this, and they're also seen in the dust spectrum. So the whole story is beginning to tie together now, and the critical part really has been this measurement of the peak spectrum. It's just characteristic of spinning dust, and it's quite different from the other techniques. We haven't convinced the whole world yet that this is the case. Our American competitors in some of our CMB work have a story where they think that this may be another sort of synchrotron emission that peaks, and you can make a peak, but it's large, much broader than the narrow peak that we have with the spinning dust.
And synchrotron was from the electron spiraling.
This is from electrons, relativistic electrons, plowing into dust clouds.
Okay.
With very high energy, and much higher energy than we know about. We haven't seen them, or high magnetic fields, higher. It's extreme. I'm showing my bias here, of course, but it is rather an extreme picture. But we're hoping we can clarify this with the Planck satellite, which is now up, and the first tests are showing it's going extremely well. And so we're looking forward in the next year or two to actually clarifying the picture, because Planck will tell us not only about this anomalous emission at the low frequencies, but it'll actually give us data at the higher frequencies that come from the dust. The dust spectrum will be better defined, so that we can run that down into our part of the spectrum and clarify the anomalous emission. So this is quite exciting time at the moment as we start powering up Planck to make these measurements, because it beautifully covers the range over which this spinning dust operates, and spinning dust is the major foreground to the cosmic microwave background at frequencies of a few tens of gigahertz up to maybe 100 gigahertz. Hmm. So it's important for cosmic microwave background studies and the origin of the universe, as well as being an interesting topic of its own. So we're interested in both sides, the dust physics and on the one hand, and the cleaned up cosmic microwave background picture on the other.
So removing it away so you can see behind.
That's right, yes.
And this anomalous emission has only been found because we've been looking across the whole range of the spectrum.
That's right. And it's been very closely associated with our search for the first structures in the cosmic microwave background, because they are extremely weak, and it's only some 15 years ago that they were detected for the first time. And as soon as one got into that detection, you then were always wanting to know how much foreground contributed to the structures that you were seeing. And the free and the synchrotron couldn't explain it all, and you had to bring in this dust-correlated component. And so we're now in a much clearer and cleaner picture in getting rid of these foregrounds so that we can reveal the full beauty and science from the cosmic microwave background.
That's a great example of science that you go looking for an answer to one question and end up discovering a completely different question that you hadn't expected.
It is, and that's one of the interesting things of a life in science, and I've seen that a number of times over my career, and it's been great to be associated with this one towards the end of one's career, if there is an end.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, Rod, for joining us and telling us about anomalous emission.
Indeed, and it's been a pleasure to do it, and I hope we haven't confused people too much by it, but it is a fascinating story, I must say.